Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of RealityCast, Kathy Spiller will be on to talk about anti-choice terrorism in Kansas. Also, Republicans have to renounce pro-choice past to run for president, and the war on Planned Parenthood continues. Feminist Frequency has been doing a series called Tropes vs. Women. The first one is near and dear to my heart.
Enter the Manic Pixie Dream Girl, the shining beacon of childlike joy that will rejuvenate our fallen hero. The Manic Pixie Dream Girl is a term coined by Nathan Rabin to describe the female character who's written to help the usually white and definitely straight male hero loosen up and enjoy life. Rabin writes that bubbly, shallow, cinematic creature that exists solely in the fevered imaginations of sensitive writer-directors to teach broodingly soulful young men to embrace life and its infinite mysteries and adventures.
Remember, manic pixie dream girls rarely make it to the end of the movie. They either die or move on or fade away. They exist solely to puff a guy up and then go on their merry way. It's halfway through 2011, and there's finally a field forming of potential Republican candidates for president, which means that it's time for another round of paying tribute to the anti-choicers. Last presidential election season, there was still a feeling in some Republican circles that you could make a solid run for president while being pro-choice, though we haven't really seen any evidence of that since Ronald Reagan, at least. In fact, the first President Bush had been pro-choice in the 70s, and he changed his tune in order to run for president in 1988. But still, the hope had stayed alive through 2008 that you could, if you bolstered your conservative credentials in other ways, be a pro-choice Republican. But Rudy Giuliani's poor showing at the polls, despite brandishing himself as a 9/11 hero, seems to have put a chill over other pro-choice Republicans. And now we're seeing a lot of pro-choice Republicans convert to anti-choice in anticipation of a presidential run. The most comical conversion from pro-choice to anti-choice has definitely been Donald Trump's. Trump is almost surely pulling a Mike Huckabee in that he's only pretending to run for president to get his name in the news and get more publicity for his actual projects that actually make money. But Trump nonetheless produced a conversion story for the Christian Broadcasting Network.
His wife was pregnant, in this case married, and she was pregnant, and he didn't really want the baby. Mm. And he was telling me the story. He was crying as he's telling me. They ended up, for some reason, amazingly, through luck, because they didn't have the right timing, he ends up having the baby, and the baby is the apple of his eye. He said it's the greatest thing that's ever happened to him. And, you know, here's a baby that wasn't going to be let into life.
The best part of this is Trump never even considers the possibility that someone as insignificant as a woman might have a role to play in an abortion decision. In this story, the wife is simply a walking uterus, and the only person who has feelings and thoughts to consider is the husband. Needless to say, because some people end up happy they had kids isn't a reason to force it on everyone. I doubt Donald Trump would enjoy being forced to make every lifestyle choice I have that I'm happy with. What makes this so amusing is that Trump clearly doesn't care one bit about the issue, and he can't even give it enough thought to understand the arguments or history, or even the most asinine right-wing arguments.
Is there a right to privacy in the Constitution?
I guess there is.
So
and
how
why
is that?
Why, just out of curiosity, why do you ask that question?
Well, I'm just wondering how that squares with your pro-life views.
Well, it's a pretty strange way of getting to pro-life. I mean, it's a very unique way of asking about pro-life. Why are you? What does that have to do with privacy? How are you equating pro-life with privacy?
Well, you know about the Roe v. Wade decision.
Yes, right. Sure. Look, I'm for pro-life. I am pro-life. I've said it. I'm very strong there, and I'm strong in pro-life.
Even the dumbest anti-choicer knows that you're supposed to deny there's a right to privacy. The whole point of being anti-choice is getting up in people's private business. That's why they like to show up at clinics with cameras. You can't cross anti-choicers on their right to be nosy and judgmental. That's far more precious than any fetus. Here, as a point of comparison, is Trump in 1999.
Well, look, I'm very pro-choice. I hate the concept of abortion. I hate it. I hate everything it stands for. I cringe when I listen to people debating the subject. But I just believe in choice. But I am strongly for choice, and yet I hate the concept of abortion.
But you would not ban it?
No.
Or maybe he hasn't changed at all, and he just thinks he gets to call himself pro-life and pick up those votes without actually advocating for a ban on abortion. Donald Trump isn't the only candidate trying to erase a pro-choice past, however. There's another candidate who is actually a serious candidate who has formally announced his run. Mitt Romney not only used to be pro-choice, but he was a passionate defender of women's rights back when running for governor in 2002.
My position has been the same throughout my political career, and it goes back to the days of 1970. There was a woman who was running for political office, U.S. Senate. She took a very bold and courageous stand in 1970, and that was in a conservative state. That was that a woman should have the right to make her own choice as to whether or not to have an abortion. Her name was Lenore Romney. She was my mom. Even though she lost, she established a record of courage in that regard. She had very strong personal beliefs about what decision she would make for herself and for her family if offered to make that choice. But she also made it clear that she thought a woman should have her own right to choose and believed in the separation of church and state. I have held that view consistently. The suggestion about my comments in Utah are complete. Now, let me complete it. And then
now he's claiming he's anti-abortion and always was. Just as with Donald Trump, though, a history of being personally disgusted with abortion but opposed to a ban isn't going to cut it with anti-choicers. They want the ban. Anything short of that isn't going to pass muster.
I'd like to welcome Kathy Spiller to the program. Kathy is the Executive Vice President of the Feminist Majority Foundation and the Executive Editor of Ms. Magazine. She's here today to talk about some troubling developments in Kansas with regards to anti-choice terrorism. Welcome to RealityCast, Kathy.
Thanks so much.
So, a brief overview of what's going on. Dr. Myla Means of Kansas has vowed to start providing abortions after the murder of Dr. George Tiller. In response, anti-choice radicals have started to harass her, and one of them, named Angel Dillard, sent a letter threatening Dr. Means' life. And what happened after all of that?
You're absolutely right. As your listeners know, Dr. Tiller was assassinated almost 2 years ago now in Wichita. He had long been a target of anti-abortion extremists that had gone after him with demonstrations. They had stalked him. He had received many threats over several years and ultimately murdered by a man named Scott Roeder. Now we've seen recently another doctor come under attack by anti-abortion extremists in Wichita. Dr. Myla Means is currently a family practice physician in Wichita and began to worry that her patients and other patients, other women in Wichita, no longer had access to comprehensive reproductive health care services, including abortion in Wichita. And so she sought training at a clinic in Kansas City to begin to be able to offer abortions as part of her family practice in Wichita. The extremists in Kansas City quickly figured out who this new doctor was that was appearing at one of the clinics there and receiving training and abortion services, and immediately notified organizations such as Operation Rescue in Wichita. Operation Rescue immediately put up an announcement that they would organize demonstrations targeting Dr. Means at her office, that they intended to keep Wichita so-called abortion-free. And it was shortly after that that not only did the demonstrations begin outside of Dr. Means' family practice office in Wichita, but wanted-style posters featuring her photograph and her address began to be circulated around Wichita. And shortly thereafter, she began to receive some very severe threats, including this letter from a woman named Angel Dillard. In the letter, and it's very explicit, saying that and that's the language that Angel Dillard used, you know, would not tolerate another abortion provider in Wichita, that we would take all means possible to make sure that abortion was not being provided in Wichita. The letter went on to warn that that Dr. Means should be looking under her car, because you never know if that's the day that someone is going to place an explosive under it. The letter said that people would be looking into her background, that they would know her habits and her routines, that they know where she lived, that they know where she drove her car. So there was a very, very significant threat in this letter. The Department of Justice has filed a case against Angel Dillard under the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances law that says you cannot threaten to use violence or use violence in an effort to intimidate an abortion provider. And unfortunately, this past week in a federal district court in Wichita, the judge found that, in his opinion, this letter did not rise to the level of a threat as defined by FACE. We think the standards that he applied to reach that decision were the wrong standards, and we're urging, of course, the Department of Justice to fight this in the next round of hearings.
Is that the only thing that the Department of Justice is trying to do, is get this injunction against her, or are they trying to put her in jail for this?
Well, this is a civil lawsuit, so the outcome of a successful civil lawsuit would be an injunction that would order Angel Dillard to stay away from Dr. Means, to stay away from her office, and to stay away from her home, and to cease and desist. But it also carries some very hefty financial fines as possibilities. And so it would be a really clear statement to extremists in Wichita that they cannot violate the law and threaten doctors and intimidate them from providing reproductive health care services. The Department of Justice also has an option of filing criminal charges, not only in this case, but in other cases in Wichita and across the country where doctors are being threatened with everything from wanted posters to stalking and other forms of threats that are illegal under the FACE law. The FACE law says that you cannot use a threat of violence, and the way you're supposed to evaluate that, which did not happen in the federal court in Wichita, is whether or not the language is very clear in the threat, and I think anyone reading this letter from Angel Dillard would conclude this language is very, very specific, and whether the recipient of the threat, Dr. Means, feels threatened. And Dr. Means testified under oath in federal court that indeed she did feel intimidated and threatened because of the context in which this threat was delivered. Dr. Tiller had been murdered by anti-abortion extremists, and this woman, Angel Dillard, had struck up a relationship with Scott Roeder while he was awaiting trial in Wichita, correspondence back and forth. This is exactly, by the way, what Scott Roeder did when he struck up correspondence and in-person visits in the jail with Shelley Shannon, who first tried to kill Dr. Tiller in 1994, and is a member of the Army of God Network, as is Scott Roeder. So in that context, where you receive a letter from a woman who is known to be associated with extremists, including one who killed the only abortion provider in Wichita within the last 2 years, and also in the context of the kinds of demonstrations that immediately started to target Dr. Means at her office, at her home, there were repeated demonstrations. And so she testified in court that she had increased her own security measures. She no longer stayed at her office alone. She feared for the safety not only of herself but of her staff. some of whom were also targeted on the wanted style posters. She talked about taking her car to a mechanic to have it checked out in case someone had tried to tamper with the car. So she clearly is demonstrating a response to these threats that should have led the judge to conclude that the letter by Angel Diller constituted a true threat under the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances law, and would have compelled him to issue this injunction.
The feds have been criticized in the past for not enforcing laws meant to protect abortion clinics from violence. How do you feel that the Justice Department has been doing lately when it comes to enforcement?
I think the Obama Justice Department has really stepped up scrutiny of threats and acts of violence against abortion providers. They have filed more lawsuits against anti-abortion extremists in the first 2 years than most of the entire Bush administration over 8 years. I think that there's no question that this department is going after these extremists, and I think also recognize that there are networks of extremists that are working together commit violence against abortion providers. There is a federal grand jury that is investigating whether or not Scott Roeder had co-conspirators in developing and executing his plan to murder Dr. Tiller. We know one thing. Scott Roeder has, for more than 15 years, been heavily involved with a network of extremists in Kansas and Missouri who identify as Army of God, who advocate the murder of doctors, who many of them themselves have been charged with criminal and civil acts in violation of the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances law. Many of them have served time in jail and in prison for using violence against reproductive health care providers. And so he was very much a part of this network. It really begs the belief that he acted alone when he was so heavily involved with a group of people who have dedicated their lives to using violence and the threats of violence against abortion providers. And so we're hopeful that the Department of Justice federal grand jury investigation of Dr. Tiller's murder will uncover how deep these connections went and whether others were involved, and that they will be brought to justice, just as Scott Roeder is now serving a life sentence for the murder of Dr. Tiller. But, you know, we believe that only after these networks are disrupted and their members are brought to justice will we see an end to violence against abortion providers. If all we ever do is prosecute the one lone person who commits the actual murder and don't go after his or her accomplices, we'll never shut down these networks. The networks will just go on to recruit yet another individual who will actually use the violence against an abortion provider. So we're very hopeful that this Justice Department, we know they understand, they've demonstrated that they understand how this violence is perpetrated, and we're very pleased that they're going after threats in an effort to stop violence before it happens. And we do hope that they will ultimately prevail in this case against Angel Dillard.
My guest today has been Kathy Spiller. The Feminist Majority Foundation tracks threats and terrorism against abortion providers through their National Clinic Access Project. You can find it at their website, which is feminist.org. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Kathy.
Well, thank you for covering this very important issue.
The federal budget battle where Planned Parenthood was being held hostage in budget negotiations may be over, but that doesn't mean that the war on contraception access is over. In fact, anti-choicers are feeling emboldened by the fact that it got as far as it did and are looking for new avenues to cut women's access off to contraception, starting, of course, with the tax on access for low-income women who go to Planned Parenthood.
Efforts to strip family planning and low-income health care funding from Planned Parenthood ultimately failed in negotiations over this year's federal budget, but the battle isn't over by a long shot, says Planned Parenthood Arizona CEO Brian Howard. He says the debate is being complicated by the spread of misinformation, such as Arizona Senator John Kyle's assertion that abortions are well over 90% of what Planned Parenthood does. Howard says the truth is exactly the opposite.
Our primary focus is on annual gynecological exams, birth control, pap smears, breast exams, testing and treatment for sexually transmitted infections.
Indeed, there are not only multiple opportunities on the horizon for conservatives to make hay over this on a federal level, including the debate over the debt ceiling and the next debate over the budget in the fall, but there's also the problem of state-level funding cuts. Indiana's Congress has voted to cut Planned Parenthood's funding, and sadly, the media coverage I've seen has been extremely poor and cowardly.
An anti-abortion bill is hitting Planned Parenthood hard. Right now, the state Senate is considering a bill that would strip the organization's funding. NewsCenter 16 Stephanie Stang talked to both sides of the issue today. So, Stephanie, what's at stake here?
Well, basically, one organization says they help provide resources for pregnancy prevention, while others say they provide resources for abortion.
One side is telling the truth, and one is lying, of course. That Planned Parenthood provides abortion doesn't mean the state money is going to it. What gets lost in all this discussion is that Planned Parenthood charges for abortion. They charge the patients, that is. Other money that goes to Planned Parenthood is reimbursements for care they offer, and those aren't abortion. This is, as it has been in the past, strictly an assault on STD testing and treatment, cancer screening, and above all else, contraception. This is about a nationwide frenzy of anger towards women for avoiding pregnancy in the first place, even though 99% of women who have sex with men use contraception. Any media report that uses the word abortion is already suspect, unless, of course, they are fact-checking anti-choice claims. What's interesting about all this is while some conservatives still cower behind the word abortion when they attack contraception, others are eagerly attacking any and all forms of sexual health care for women as a threat to society. Florida Congressman Alan West didn't hold back in explaining his opposition to affordable contraception and STD screening.
To let these other women know on the other side, these Planned Parenthood women, the Code Pink women, and all of these women who that have been neutering American men and bringing us to the point of this incredible weakness, to let them know that we are not going to have our men become subservient.
In real life, very few men feel neutered by contraception. In real life, men are usually grateful for contraception because it usually means more, not less, sex for them. In fact, it takes a remarkably insecure man to feel neutered because he doesn't always have a pregnant woman on display to others to make sure that they know that his junk works. Most men will pick more frequent sex and a better financial situation for their homes than just having one baby after another to demonstrate that they control and dominate women. And then there's the focus on just saying ridiculous, hysterical things about Planned Parenthood.
They say they're obeying the law. They say they just want to help women's health. But the Umbercomer video says that they're aiding and abetting child sex rings.
Using exactly the same levels of proof that O'Reilly has, I can safely say that Bill O'Reilly is aiding and abetting child sex rings, which is to say no proof at all. O'Reilly certainly has done less to break up child sex rings than Planned Parenthood, however. See, after some people came in claiming to be pimping underage girls to a Planned Parenthood, Planned Parenthood called the cops. So far, O'Reilly has never called the cops on an alleged child sex ring. So, out of the two, he's more guilty, since, you know, he didn't call the cops.
When I get down, you know I get down. When I get around, you know I get around.
And now for the Wisdom of Wingnuts. Yes, Pat Robertson is still around edition. He's around and has a unique thought on why it is that liberals are pro-choice.
If a woman is a lesbian, what advantage does she have over a married woman? Or what deficiency does she have?
Well, she can't have children.
That's exactly right. And so if these married women don't have children, if they abort their babies, then it kind of puts them on a level playing field. And you say, well, nobody's there to express that. Isn't that shocking? Well, think about it a little bit, ladies and gentlemen.
One of the things about right-wing rhetoric I'll never understand is this assumption that conceiving is some great and unusual miracle, and that sperm is in short supply and women are desperate for it. From what I can tell, men are giving this stuff away at the same clip that they always were.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for a weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.